America. Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. I'm waiting for my guest to call in, but before he does, or while we're waiting, I'd like to make a statement or comment about what's going on in Charlottesville and in the country. I mean, before the show, my producer and I were speaking about this coordinated effort to divide and conquer. You know, I personally think that we are all in this together. It doesn't matter whether you're black, white, green. Our country has got a lot of issues that need to be addressed, and ultimately, we need to take a step back and look at where we are as opposed to where we were. This is not the '60s. We're not going back in time. We are all living in a position where if you have a skill and you have a God-given talent, you can pursue it, and you can actually have a quality life. This tearing down a statue does nothing to put food on your table, put your children through school, help you pay your mortgage or your taxes. And to fight this battle, it's a no-win situation. And potentially it has the position or the ability to absolutely break our society in such a way that it's not recoverable. Can you imagine, Dave, if this gets out of control? What do you think the next step is going to be? It's not going to be sweetness and light. It's going to be more, government control, maybe even martial law. And once that happens, civil rights are gone. We can have a conversation about Obamacare, whatever we like, but if that comes on plane or to pass, it's done.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't agree. It's like everything else. The old saying, the tail wagging the dog.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the numbers. And I can't quote numbers from Charlottesville. But the reality of it is, they are a minority. Both sides are minority. Neither one of them, in my opinion, speaks for the majority.
Mm-hmm.
You hit it on the head. We've changed. My neighborhood is integrated, and I don't even like to say that. We have Americans living in my neighborhood, and I really don't think that any of my neighbors have marked anybody's houses with a B or a W,
Mm-hmm.
We're Americans, and I think if we just step back and say, okay, I don't know how many people are in Black Lives Matter. I really don't give a damn. But you take that number, and it's got to be small. It's got to be very small in comparison. And I don't think that in any shape, form, or fashion, they speak for every black person in America. I just don't believe that. Nor does the KKK or any of the neo-Nazi crap. Do they speak for... They damn sure don't speak for me.
No, I don't think they speak for a majority of people. Look at the movie Detroit that was supposedly... It came out before this. And it was hyped to the nines. It was on as a commercial every 15 seconds, it seemed like. Only $7 million worth of tickets were bought to see this movie. Does that tell anybody anything? If the actual mood of the country was as dire and as divisive as these guys want us to believe, that movie should be number one in the box office. It's going to be out of the theater before anybody even takes a, blinks. That's where the mood of the country is. We all just want to get the economy going, have safety, be able to pursue, save some money for retirement, pursue, again, what you're put on this earth to do, not to take, your energy and effort to take statues down that mean nothing. And if you knew your history, those Confederate generals are Democrats. The Ku Klux Klan was started by Democrats. The people in the South who wanted segregation were Democrats. Learn your history before you let somebody lead you around by the nose to tell you how you should think and how you should feel. Nobody's going to do that for me, or you, or anybody who has critical thinking skill and the ability and the moxie to go and read. While the internet is still open, you better go and do some research on exactly where this is coming from. This is the same playbook as Ferguson, as Baltimore, where the government or the city mayor tells the police department to stand down. This is not the first time this has happened. There's nothing, freedom of speech really means freedom of speech. Everybody has the right to voice their opinion. If these people got a permit to rally in that park, there is no reason that counter groups without permits were allowed to come up on them while there were police drones. And the police were, chief said, and I read this online on Saturday, we were told to stand down by the mayor and not to engage.
But yet the police chief of Charlottesville came on and said, nobody told us to stand
down.
That's
a lie, because it was said on the internet. So even the people who were there are saying that there were drones in the air, their police were, fights broke out. Before all this got completely out of control, fights broke out, and the police did nothing but watch. They should have stepped in then. First of all, it shouldn't have gotten to that point, because they should have kept these counter-protesters a block or two away. Then I read that after they broke, got out of control, or before they got out of control, little fights were breaking out, but they had people leave the park. But the way they herded them, the way they removed them from the park, was to make them walk a gauntlet between the Antifa, Black Lives Matter, the counter-protesters. What do you think is going to happen when you take two hot-headed groups, hate each other, ginned up for violence, and have them right next to each other? What do you think is going to happen? And Antifa, which is an anarchist organization, it's not a freedom fighter group. That's what the media is trying to portray it as, which is laughable. Whatever credibility mainstream media had, I think, is over when you start saying that an anarchist group who throws human waste, bricks, uses bats, uses violence, which they've never put on TV. They never even identified these people on the news, but they've been on in Berkeley, everywhere. And you're going to call them a freedom fighter? This is...
Wait a second. Okay, define freedom fighter. What does that mean?
In my world, it means somebody who's fighting for peace and actually does not foment violence.
Do we not have freedom? Would they not be able to be there if they didn't have the freedom to march?
That's a very good point. No.
So what the hell are they fighting for?
They're fighting to upend society. They're fighting just like the Obamacare situation, where you have to create chaos in order to bring in a new version of something. This is not arbitrary. It's by design. And what they wanted and what they had set up were other demonstrations across the country. I read that they had one in Seattle, New York, Dallas. This was supposed to be a coordinated effort. Imagine if all of that chaos had been multiplied in those cities. What do you think might have gone down? But, you have to watch who stands to gain. It's not the individual, on a picket line or whatever these guys are doing, creating, fermenting violence. They're not the people who stand to gain from this. We've seen already how this is operating. You bus in people. You pay people to be professional agitators. And I just listened on the way in the car that the people who started the violence disappeared when it got rolling. Are we all being played? This is what people need to start thinking about. What's the bigger picture? Who stands to gain? Follow the money and take your power back. Stop being led around by the emotional nose. As soon as you start thinking with the lower brain, it's eat, sleep, procreate, it's just no critical thinking skills that go on. Then they win. There's no reason why anybody who's against the administration cannot go up and have a conversation and say, this is why we disagree. How can we work together? There is no reason not to be able to do that unless you don't want to do that, unless you're hell-bent on taking this administration down. To be replaced with what, I ask? If you do get what you want, what do you think is going to happen? It's not going to be peaceable. It's not going to be everybody getting along all of a sudden. It's not going to be kumbaya. It's going to be pretty bad. Do it the right way. If you lost, then you should, you know, meet, get together, create a strategy and a plan, and vote in the next election. Put up a candidate that's decent this time. Do something to make them work within the system. This is what needs to happen. And turning over the game when you're losing is ridiculous. This is not child, you know, you're not a child anymore. This is real world consequences that could not only destroy the country, maybe even go further than that if you really think about it. I don't want to. But there's some underlying force that's driving us towards hating each other, towards becoming all sorts of dependent on the government. And it's follow the money. All of the people in Congress now who voted against repeal and replace, who use the argument of, oh, I can't let Medicaid die in my state, you need to understand that Medicaid has become a money-making venture, right? So they had trillions of dollars that got funneled into states, but they didn't use that money necessarily for Medicaid. They used it for other things. Infrastructure, you name it. Here in Georgia, there's a commercial, I don't know if you've seen it, where it says Medicaid and it's like a roulette wheel, and it goes banking, you know, other things. It's not just medical care. They're not going to give up that gravy train. That's why Obamacare won't die, because the states are feeding from the trough, because the insurance companies are feeding from the trough. That's why. It's so sick. And it's not about patient care. And they could care less about the people who are working poor. They don't care about you people. Get over it and start making your own decisions. Start taking your power back. Yeah. Everybody who listens to the show should, I hope, have a clue about what you need to do to take, to make some choices about your health care and about your health. I tell patients every day, don't get sick. This is not a system that you want to be ill in, because it's not really designed to help you. Not anymore. And it's just very sad. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Did you miss the show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
This is Lawyer Liz. Join me each week as we discuss drones, the Internet of Things, and all the technology in between. It's Buzz Off with Lawyer Liz, Wednesdays at 2.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Good morning and welcome back to Medicine on Call. My guest is on the line now. This is Dr. Gregory Yang that's joining us today. He's the medical director of institutional research at the Yuma Regional Medical Center. He's a medical oncologist. And with all of the rates of cancer going up through the roof, I wanted to have a doctor on to speak about that, about what his experience is like on the front line, because it's so expensive, it's so daunting if somebody gets that kind of diagnosis, It's time that we get some real-world experience and information. So, Dr. Yang, thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your practice like?
I work in for the Yuma Regional Cancer Center in Yuma, Arizona. It's the it's one of the hottest places in the country, you know, and it is also one of the poorest places in the country, also.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it is pretty challenging to give cancer care, but you know, we have those. Times when, you know, you can only wait so much and then you decide to get things activated, and it is a smaller town, and so we have some pretty unique programs here that we have instituted. We have it's a smaller size town, and we are servicing a large Hispanic community, a large community of transient, what you call winter visitors here, as well as the general population that has been here for many, many generations. So I am a medical oncologist. I started out in Tucson, Arizona, and decided to come here about 5 years ago to start some of these projects. We have in getting better care to patients.
You know. That's amazing. I mean, just as I said in the intro, it's so daunting to know that the cost. I mean, it's probably one of the most expensive healthcare treatment plans that you can have is if you've been diagnosed with cancer. You know, you're dealing with a population that doesn't have a lot of resources. How are they? What are you doing? What's novel that you're doing to help them afford it?
Well, we are, at this time, we have several programs that we are trying to institute so that we are doing everything we can to allow the patient to get as many preventive programs going before they even get the cancer, and we just started that right now. The hospital itself has several programs that they use to help the people who are the, you know, citizens of the country that will that allows a lot of benefits. But on our own itself, we had to do a lot of projects that really takes off bits and pieces of the expenses before they come to us, you know.
I mean, is there a foundation, or is there a sliding scale? Is there price transparency? What exactly is it that you're doing to help people afford the treatment?
We work with a lot of the drug companies so that we can get a lot of the treatments for free.
Mm.
We also run a lot of clinical trials, which allows us to get the medicine for free also, and with the added advantage of being able to create opportunities for bringing better therapy to this area.
That's great. You wonder why more places don't do that. In terms of the clinical trials and well, actually prevention, because just because someone has been, you know, or has a family history of cancer, does that actually necessarily mean that they are absolutely going to get it? What can people do, in your opinion, to lower their risk?
Well, you know, what you're talking about is population health, and there's a lot of wonderful programs in the state that started out in Phoenix that they're trying to work throughout the states, throughout the Arizona. But in Yuma itself, we are incorporating a heavy program in trying to do three main things. First, we're working with a lot of genomics in again, in predictive genomics and trying to find out what patients are at risk for. Second, we are participating as much as we can in developing the help develop diagnostic testing that will bring the diagnosis of cancer as early as possible. For example, there's this one study that we are doing with a company in Phoenix where we take patients who are at a high risk for developing non-small cell lung cancer from smoking, and we follow the low-dose CT program and trying to find a nodule. And if we find a nodule, there is now a new technology that will allow us to diagnose that nodule faster by taking sputum from that patient at the same time, and that sputum is put into a CAT scan that's only the size of a bread box. You're not doing a CAT scan of the body, you're doing a CAT scan of the cell itself. So what happens is a patient that is normally diagnosed with lung cancer from smoking when it's bigger, we hope we can catch these cells not only when it's smaller. At right now, we're working with ones that are 6 millimeters in diameter only. There is a program now in also catching pre-cancer lung cancer cells that will allow us to catch the cancer before it becomes a cancer and institute medication that will prevent the onset of the cancer itself. That program is running right now here and other parts of the country.
That's awesome. Just imagine how many people you'll save with that without, you know, huge surgeries and radiation and all the things that go on to after the diagnosis is made. I can imagine the cost savings that would actually allow to happen too. That's amazing. That's groundbreaking.
Yes, it is. It's a game changer. And what happens with that specific test is that specific test is now being used for non-small cell lung cancer. We're helping develop the test. The estimated savings itself, after the numbers were run through, from about $50,000 per life saved using the low-dose CT program that's running throughout the country now, down to about $8,000. So $50,000 to $8,000 is a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But even more important, that's, you know, trying to just diagnose a smaller primary, like a 6-millimeter primary. The even better is that we are now on the beginning of trying to catch it before it becomes a cancer. So, and this can be translated to in any other of the other diseases where you can get a liquid. So instead of sputum, as you can imagine, you can get liquid from the kidney, the bladder, or the prostate to catch the prostate cancer easier, as well as, you know, getting saliva for head and neck and stomach and pancreatic cancer.
That's amazing.
So we're participating in that. And so when people are saying that, you know, we are going to do everything that we can to prevent the diseases, we follow the large programs that they have in, you know, decreasing the amount of smoking, eating the proper foods, but at the same time, we are also beginning the process of saying, you know, we need more preventive drugs that are cheap, safe, and are going to be taken for a long time. We're encouraging as much of our research to include that in all the research we're doing concurrently with cancer care or the patients who are actively getting cancer. For example, we are studying populations, and there are people all over the country who are studying populations of persons who do not get lung cancer, even though they're heavy-duty smokers.
Mm-hmm.
You have a 92-year-old who is a two-pack-per-day smoker, and he doesn't develop lung cancer. There are people in Seattle that want his blood and try to find out why he did not develop cancer when he should have with all that smoking. We get enough of that database, we're going to do reverse evaluations here, so that instead of finding out what went wrong with the patient, we're going to try to contribute to the database, so we're going to find out what we did, what happened that was right with the patient that prevented the actual disease, and try to find that genomically, save that information, and then and try to recopy it in the preventive mode. So we're the people who survived the cancer, they're doing well, as well as those people who never developed the cancer, even though they put themselves in a position to they put themselves in a position to cause the cancer, there's something special about them. Mm-hmm. And if you get that genomic database, possibly manipulation can be done eventually that will copy that. So that's a very, very exciting field. Actually, the big sites are in Seattle. And once we get our program going, we'll be able to do a lot of that.
Well, I have a devil's advocate type of question because I'm concerned with the gene therapy, CRISPR technology, where you can edit genes and insert genes. Do you foresee that being a treatment? If you find the thing that made that 92-year-old resistant, some sort of gene, is that a therapy you think would come down the line?
I think that may be a possibility that will be part one of the solutions. But then you may not have to do that either. I'll give you an example. You know, as you know, you're hearing a lot about immunotherapy being the answer now for a lot of the cancers. It's very, very big hit. Has really changed the response rate tremendously. Well, there are people in Europe who are looking at the target, which are called the checkpoint, the PD-L1 target sites on the cancer cell, where the immune system is supposed to work on. And a lot of people don't realize that olive oil also goes after those target sites. And so if you are able to find out what is going to cause that and try to find out, it may be something as simple as a change in diet specific for that patient who has that higher, who can't protect themselves. It doesn't have to be a genetic change. It can be a definite diet change, but it has to be a specific diet to see what you can find out. You know, the data that is going to be involved is looking at the microbiome. You know, the bugs, the microbes that are living on a patient's body in the gastrointestinal tract is going to be a big determinant of what illnesses that we're going to have. And it's a very exciting field that we can use, and may not necessarily mean genetic modification resources or, genetic modifications like CRISPR. It may not be required to do that. So okay. It just has to be the right food for the right patient.
On that note, Greg, let's take a break and come back and pick that up. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Do you have problems with sinus pain and pressure? Do other people smell things that you don't? Have you lost the joy in eating because food just doesn't taste like it used to? Is your nose always stuffy no matter what you do? Maybe you have sinus or nasal polyps. These are generally benign growths that occur from chronic sinus infection or allergies that are either undertreated or have not been treated at all. At Peachtree ENT Center, we specialize in minimally invasive balloon dilation sinus surgery and correction of a deviated nasal septum and turbinate reduction surgery that can be done in the office. We use the state-of-the-art equipment so that you can see the problem. You will be a partner in your care, and together we will decide the course of treatment. We believe in old-fashioned medicine, where we take the time to fix the problem, not just medicate the symptoms. You can rest assured that all options will be offered before surgery is recommended, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're talking with Dr. Gregory Yang, the Medical Director of Institutional Research at the Yuma Regional Medical Center. And before the break, Dr. Yang, we were talking about the gut. Basically, I think this is one of the most important parts of our body. It has so many things that it affects. And you talked about the microbiome and bad yeast, bad bacteria, all those things, I assume, making it more likely that we're preferentially growing things that are toxic and turn our system towards cancer. Is that a way that you think about it?
Oh, absolutely. You will have genetic factors that predisposes you to that, but the translation of that effect, what you know, people are saying, the effect of the environment the food that we eat is now being felt to be manifested by the way the microbes are occupying our bodies and gut, you know. This, you know, for example, you know, the new drugs, there's a report in last big oncology meeting in Chicago that the new powerful immunotherapy, there's a new study that shows that it can be inactivated by something as simple as antibiotics. You know, $10,000-$15,000 worth of drugs. You give antibiotics a month ahead of time, It stops the immune system from going after the cancer that you just gave the patient.
Wow.
It's amazing. So if antibiotics can affect the new immunotherapies that we're now using for the cancer, and of course that has to be substantiated in bigger studies, just imagine what else is happening for decades that allows the manipulation of cells directed by specific genetic predisposition that allows a disease to come. You know, a lot of the Hispanic research folks the gastrointestinal, but now it is pretty prevalent in this area, is that we are now having younger people getting colon cancer. I spoke to some oncologists from Mexico City, and they are seeing up to 25% of their patients are now under 4 years old who were developing colon cancer, and they feel there is definitely something happening to the microbiome that's allowing this to happen. So nobody thinks that anybody has had any exposure that will cause a primary damage DNA and genomics from the very beginning. Something happened in between the time the patient was born and as they got older. You know, so it's a very, very powerful component of treatment that they have to develop in order to have true control of the disease. So we're looking forward to doing a lot more work in that area. They have to take that into consideration in determining the more effective treatments in the future. and seeing what is happening to the patient's viruses and bacteria.
Well, is there any population studies being done on people in developing countries who don't get vaccinated as often, who the children live in areas where they're playing in dirt, they're getting exposed to natural pathogens, and their immune system is fighting it, so they're pretty tough. I mean, we do give our children here antibiotics at the drop of a dime. We just seem to really just knock them out with antibiotics and various things that mess with the immune system in their developmental stage. Even pregnant women, for example, are getting vaccinated. Is there any population study that compares the cancer rate, let's say, like you just said, the colon cancer rate in young people in a developed country versus a developing country? Is that being done?
I'm not sure specifically, and I cannot cite one, but I am sure there's something running now that they're working through that. You know, even something simpler is the single-payer system in Canada a very, very effective system, or are we just working with tougher people who live in a very, very cold environment, that they are able to take advantage of less medical care that we are dependent on? You know, are the Canadians tougher than we are? And so something that like that should be looked at. It would be very, very interesting and eventually contributory to exactly what you're saying. As far as that conjecture is definitely there, that we are the people who are who don't run and get antibiotics right away. A lot of times, they are definitely stronger, have a stronger immune system.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you have to know what the immune system is. If it really is stronger, or if something else got turned off the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have any ways of looking at this before, but we do now. So you can determine which patients should not get as much medication. Possibly that's one of the solutions,
mm-hmm.
and other people should get more. It'll be individualized.
And I don't know if you can address this, but talking about gut health again, you know, all of these the explosion of food allergies with gluten sensitivities, with I've read that glyphosate, which is the same chemical as Roundup, when you eat that or have foods that have that in it, it totally blunts or affects the GI tract. So you can't absorb as well as you're supposed to. You've got an inflammatory response that goes wild. Do you think that's also one of the reasons that we're seeing an uptick, in cancer?
Well, the thing about cancer, as we are looking at now, we're not in eventually again with the use of good supercomputer system to run the numbers, is that it's not going to be one single item that is going to make a difference. It's going to be many things, put together, probably 10, 15 data sets, microbiome, the patient's, the patient's germline genomics, what the somatic genomics are in the cancer itself that eventually comes up. There's a lot of things that are involved that are going to do that. And, I'm not trying to advocate for anything pro this, pro that.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be open
mm-hmm.
to find out what's really happening that will be applicable for all people. So there may be some people who will have that problem and some people who won't. So.
I agree with you. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all for anything. But I think we could probably agree on, if you put a lot of chemicals in your system, it's not a good thing. I mean, because it can cause things in people that otherwise wouldn't manifest, right? So I'd say we clean our diet out would be number one. I mean, when you talk to patients about changing their eating habits, what do you counsel them? Do you counsel them to stay off of sugar? What do you tell them?
Yeah, we keep with the adage that, you know, you have to minimize excesses in anything and keep that as a general habit. We do tell them to take less sugars, but our thing that we are doing is we're gathering data to make sure that what we are telling people will be applicable for them,
mm-hmm.
Which I think, you know, is the big thing that is happening rather than general rules. For now, the general rules will work, but in the future it's going to change so that it will be, we feel, genomically based and a lot of database that will be able to help the patient so that they are not so confused. So there are too many people who are doing the right things, but they get sick anyway. And so we follow the general guidelines, but in the future it will be more tailorable in the prevention mode.
Well, that's in the future, but right now, what are three things that you, three tenets or three things that you could tell somebody that they could at least begin the process of lowering their risk?
Well, it depends we do recommend eating a balanced diet, watching those sugars very carefully,
mm-hmm.
and probably the most is the exercise. Exercise is probably the most equally important facet in working with inflammation, which a lot of people feel are contributing to the cancer. The wrong kind of inflammation is contributing to cancer.
Can you explain that? Because that's shorthand for you and I, but is there, what's a good inflammation and what's a bad inflammation in your opinion?
Yeah, a bad inflammation is when a specific site in your body, like the colon, gets too much of the immune system working on it. There has to be a repair. There is a damage that is caused by the inflammation, and there has to be a repair, and that gives an opportunity for a bad cell that wants to reproduce excessively to come out and be able to start growing, and that will be the beginning of cancer. And so a lot of folks are saying that we have to find the right targets for to be addressed by, you know, diet,
mm-hmm.
that will manipulate that, to minimize that inflammation so that bad cells won't start coming out.
Now, in a second or a few minutes ago, you mentioned olive oil as a really good food that could depress or keep cancer from coming online. Is that something that everybody should consider eating or adding to their diet? That seems pretty innocuous and pretty powerful, technically.
Well, a lot of people feel that that is the basis of the Mediterranean diet,
mm-hmm.
is that it's not the whole diet itself, because, you know, the French people follow the Mediterranean diet, and a lot of their food is not exactly too healthy, but they don't have a high coronary artery rate. You know, surprisingly, compared to the other European countries, and cancer rate isn't that much higher. But they do use a lot of olive oil, so a lot of people think that olive oil is a very good product in concert with a reasonable amount of other foods. So, again, we're just at the beginning, and again, I don't want to give hearsay, because we're trying to get down to the science of individualizing a lot of these things that we could not do before.
Well, on that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on americaswebradio.com.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. We've won patient care awards and have the highest patient recommendations because we believe in practicing medicine the old-fashioned way. Practicing good medicine is based in listening to the patient and making a care plan that is individual. The best medical care is given when there is a strong doctor-patient relationship built on mutual trust and respect. At Peachtree ENT Center, we believe in taking care of the whole patient because healing is more than writing a prescription. Whether you have problems hearing, have frequent throat or sinus infections, from the time you call our office and speak to a real person, you'll be treated as an individual and not as an ailment. During your visit, you will not be rushed and all your questions will be answered. When possible, natural treatments will be recommended to fix the problem. If surgery is recommended, cost-effective, minimally invasive treatment for snoring, sleep apnea, or sinus problems will be offered because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking with Dr. Gregory Yang, a medical oncologist who's on the front line of the new, I think, a new frontier on cancer treatment, where it's individualized, where it doesn't mean the standard treatment of chemo radiation. It's about real prevention and about, and it looks like to me, non-caustic, non-toxic treatments. I mean, the side effects of what you're describing to treat in the methods you say that you want to treat people seems really very easy for the patient compared to what they're doing now. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. The treatment has to be expected to be given on a long term.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be much less toxic, and the and it has to be inexpensive, of course, because it's going to be given for a long time, and they cannot, you know, this can be done, we believe, so that if people are looking for treatments, whether it's a genetically modified technology versus the big changes in the diet specific for that patient.
Mm-hmm.
We have to find a way of looking at it so that we can identify what is specifically good for that patient. And, you know, and it could really save things in the long run. You know,
before the break, you mentioned, we talked about bad inflammation, and I asked if there was a good inflammation, and we never got to that point. Is there a good inflammation?
The good inflammation. So I'm working backwards here. So the new treatments that we are now, you're now hearing about, the immunotherapy. Okay, that is a very, very powerful tool that we are using now, that we give strong medications to allow the good immune system to go after the cancer cell, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, why did that immune system not work that required our special heavy-duty medicine to turn it on against the cancer? So the idea is you try to find out what that is specifically that failed and did not protect the patient, and promote that and allow it to do its job in recognizing cancer when it is still younger or thinking about being formed, and get that turned on. That's an idea. That's the way I look at it. You know, that there's something wrong with your immune system that you allow the cancer to come. Now we have to give big medicines that allow it to do its job on a temporary basis. Why couldn't it have been done for the last 10 to 15 years by giving you a medicine that also promotes that?
Mm-hmm.
So the trick is now in being able to find the specific immune system component that we have to concentrate on.
Well, you know, what you're doing is so exciting. I know that there are people listening to the show all over the country who, if they have been diagnosed, would, you know, love the opportunity to be in a trial or find a center that's in there close to them that they could actually access. One, do the people who enter your system have to be from Arizona to do it, or can they come from a different state?
Well, they can definitely come from a different state, but we are building our base right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the information is coming in so rapidly. You know, it is coming in so rapidly. It's like going to a grocery store and you have those weekly ads that you get in your mail once a week.
Mm-hmm.
You imagine getting 10 years worth of the weekly ad sale coming to your front door every week, and you're supposed to work it out. We are going to be building consortiums with the state as well as partners in other states starting in the Southwest, and we will be able to build a network in being able to do this across the country.
And would it also, like in Arizona, be able to take in and help people who don't have economic means?
Well, absolutely. That is definitely our aim, because we feel that subset of the patient population let's just put it this way. If we are able to, this is a better way of putting it, if we are able to do our job properly in the prevention,
mm-hmm.
and unfortunately it's going to take a little bit of time, you know, the time is 10 to 15 years, is that it will be, the cost and the driver to do treatments that are expensive after the cancer already gets there are going to be reduced significantly, we hope, so that there is going to be more money for everybody else in trying to use it. Because it's just, you know, just so instead of having 15 drug companies trying to develop the next immunotherapy,
mm-hmm.
I said, why don't you take some of your knowledge and then work with the primary prevention people and saying, okay, now this is the stuff that's working for this family. Do we have a target in the other family members that we can use to protect them if it looks like they're going to be predisposed to the diseases? So it's a very, very possible that we will have more money for everybody else once the prevention gets going, because we are directing our work here a lot toward that, specifically the Hispanic population, in preventing disease so that the overall cost of medicine will be less, you know.
Is there any pushback in your city from other medical centers that, you know, let's face it, this is a business. Healthcare has now become a business, and it's about profit, and you are running counter to that. You're offering a treatment that is more cost-effective, fixes the problem. You know the typical mindset of a physician who's out there to help their patient. Are you getting any pushback or any negativity from, competitors?
Well, I haven't seen it lately, but you are probably right that there will be. But again, we're still at a very novel position and a very early stage that we're not seeing any opposition. But how can anybody oppose this? including the people who are supposed to be making treatments that are in opposition to what I am doing. So you talk to an executive for a drug company, and I said, you know, I'm talking of protecting your kids, your grandkids, and your family in the future. So if you really think that your drugs are going to be able to take care of everything, you're shorting your own family, you know?
Yeah.
Whenever I make a presentation, I always show a picture of my granddaughter to remind people that this is what I'm working for. I think everybody should be doing that. You make a big presentation for a drug company. You make a big presentation for a diagnostic. Keep in mind what you're trying to do this for. Is that it? You know, for me, it may be too late. I'm 60. I'm in my 60s. And I may have done all the wrong things all my life, but at least what I'm doing now, I think will help future generations, because it will hit everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All the politics that have been going on with Joe Biden, what is the most forefront in his mind now? It's his son.
Mm-hmm.
He probably wished somewhere in there, he said, you know, I wish I could have. He's probably saying it every day, and he's doing it now with his moonshot program, is that I wish I could have done more. You know, where else could I have done more? And everybody should say that. I think it's more than just a change in trying to help people. It's just change of attitude of people towards themselves. Is that stop thinking in terms of just yourself and try to start thinking about your own family, you know? Well, one of the things that has to happen is that the doctors have to change. We have to start getting very, 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 very smart people who are going to be educated heavily in genetics, data analytics, get into the primary care field. They have to do that. And then they can start spotting patients who they think, you know, they may have something that we can deal with now so it doesn't become a bigger problem later on. That paradigm shift in just the way residents and are being trained and what they are going to be asked to do is going to change. Stop referring patients, because we're asking you to develop the systems for the future so that the diseases will have a minimal impact. The people who worked out the genomics from 20 years ago from the Whole Genome Project, they know that this is going to come, and they've just been waiting for the prices of these testing to come to a very reasonable level. In 2003, when they sequenced all the genes in one patient, it cost over $110 million. We now have it down to 470 or less, you know, less than the price of a cell phone. That is all they were waiting for at this moment has come. That
hey, Greg, I'm going to have to stop you.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're on a roll. I have to have you back so we can explore what you just said about primary care and using a different paradigm. And I thank you so much for joining me. And thank you for listening to Medicine on Call, and I definitely want to have you back.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You're listening to America's Web Radio.